Blog Talk Radio.
What a spawn. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Free American Hour. I'm your host, Clay Douglas. My guest today is John DiNardo, and we're going to be talking about Planet X. If you've got questions, a couple of things you can do. You can call in on the show, a blog talk at 646-915-8774 while we're doing the show. And you can also go to the link on freeamerican.com and click on the chat room and come in there and join Max and Bo Cephas and Pro Truth Program, and I'm sure Grump will be showing up there too. Hello, John. How are you?
Hi, Clay. I'm glad to be joining you and your audience.
Well, nice to have you. You've kind of been a fan of mine for many years, haven't you? You were a subscriber to the Free American Magazine. You listened to my shortwave show, too, didn't you?
Yeah, going back to the early 90s.
Yeah, I started all this about 1994.
Right, and you were the first guy to actually publicize the concept of Planet X. Nobody else would talk about it.
That's right. I seem to talk about a lot of things that other people don't talk about, you know.
Well, you know, so many people are rehashing the same stories about the New World Order, and it is vital information. But there's so many patriot broadcasters that are repeating the same information that we really need to get some other vital information that everybody is ignoring. In fact, this information about Planet X will make the New World Order seem like an anthill. That's why it's so important.
I think they're preparing for it. They are certainly preparing for it. Why else would we, our government, be spending billions of dollars, trillions of dollars, building underground shelters? And this is pretty common knowledge. I mean, they even allowed Jesse Ventura to visit one of these things. Why would they be having food vaults with heritage seeds? I don't think they're storing Monsanto's, no food that we don't own, genetically modified crap in these underground seed vaults up in Finland, isn't it?
Norway, I believe. Norway. Close to the Arctic Circle where the cold temperatures will keep the seeds.
And there, I've got some pretty bright people on my chat room, and they say the frequency of great earthquakes is increasing. We've got fires burning right now in Russia that is threatening the whole country. Now again, back to these underground shelters. I mean, why would we build it? Are we still planning for a nuclear war in this united one world government?
No, the underground shelters. Incidentally, Marshall Masters in his book Planet X Forecast. Stated that there were, as of the writing of that book, there were 131 underground cities They spent trillions of dollars building these cities. They've used nuclear-powered tunneling machines to tunnel through the deep rock, and they are able to drill through or create tunnels 28 feet high by 28 feet wide, big enough to get a truck through, at a rate of 7 miles per day. This is what Marshall Masters reported in his book. And Phil Schneider was a well-known, highly credentialed geologist who worked for the United States government for 17 years. He had given talks to many government officials of foreign nations, and Phil Schneider realized that he had to reveal this information to the public, and he began to make speeches back in the mid-1990s. They tried to kill him numerous times, and finally they succeeded. Phil Schneider was a brave man, a great hero, and this is another piece of vital information that proved that these people are prepared to go underground. They're going to be doing it soon, if not already. One of my ideas was that I need people to help in this project of finding dignitaries, world-famous dignitaries who are going underground. It is so important that we detect when Queen Elizabeth disappears from public sight, when Prince Philip disappears from public sight, when Maurice Strong, David Rockefeller, Stephen Rockefeller, all these people start to disappear. Because when they go underground, that means we're about to be hit. We're about to be hit by meteor strikes or some other natural disaster. Because they know
there have been increasing reports of meteor strikes down, I believe, in South America, somewhere near South America.
Yes, that's true. And the reason why you'll see more meteor strikes right now in the southern hemisphere is because Planet X is coming up from below our ecliptic plane. Our ecliptic plane is a huge invisible disk, like a compact disk in space. And this on this invisible disk revolve all the planets of our solar system around the sun. The sun would be like the hub of the compact disk. And Planet X is coming up from below it. It takes this is scientifically shown for many, scientifically and archaeologically proven to be coming in. This planet comes in on a cometary orbit, and its orbital period is approximately 3,600 years.
How long again?
Approximately 3,600 years. And we have found evidence, archaeological and ecological evidence, geological evidence, to indicate that the last time it came in, it created disasters. For example, dated around 1660 BC, 3,660 years ago, the great Santorini volcanic caldera exploded. It had the highest volcanic explosive index that these geologists have determined it was the highest ever since in all of history, including recorded history. And this had put out a cloud of ash that covered, it was in the Aegean Sea, and it covered the entire area, destroyed the Minoan civilization, the famed advanced Minoan civilization in those Aegean islands. That cloud of ash drifted down and covered the entire land of Egypt. And you will see in the book of Exodus, chapter 9, where God tells Moses and Aaron to pull up handfuls of ashes from the furnace and throw these ashes up in the air in the face of Pharaoh and his magicians. And God said that all this ash would come down as hot, you know, burning embers over the entire land of Egypt. And at that time, that cloud of ash from the Santorini volcano drifted over Egypt and fulfilled that prophecy. Absolutely amazing. But we have other evidence. We have tree rings. When scientists examine the tree rings, they find that tree rings about 3,600 years ago are very narrow. And the reason for that is that when you have a volcanic winter, a nuclear winter, where the skies are covered with ash, there's a great deprivation of sunlight, and all vegetation suffers. And that's what happened with those trees. That's why the tree rings were narrowed 3,600 years ago. So we have geological, we have ecological evidence. that this thing comes in every 3,600 years. Now, if you go back another 3,600 years from the time of the Exodus, 1660 B.C., to around 5,300 B.C., you'll find out there's some geologists by the name of Ryan and Pittman, two geologists, Ryan and Pittman, P-I-T-M-A-N, who have done studies and found that the Dead Sea in Russia, the Black Sea in Russia, shows great evidence of the Great Flood of Noah's Day having occurred around 5,300 B.C. Now, there you go. There's another 1,600-year period. This shows that the period of this comet, this cometary period, is very regular, just as all comets have a regular, predictable period. Is about 3,600 years, so it's due now. If you just do the arithmetic, you'll find out it's due about this time. But not only the arithmetic, the events that are exploding all around us right now are additional proof that this thing is coming in. This huge brown dwarf star, which has been estimated by none other than the federal government of the United States of America through the New York Times and through the Washington Post. They made a mistake. They did not intend to put this information out, but it got out, and then they finally realized they made a mistake. But once it was printed in the newspapers, they could not retract it. They stated to the federal government of the United States through its major branch, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, said two things in the New York Times and the Washington Post. They said this planet exists, and this planet has been sighted by their infrared astronomical satellite, their space telescope that they built and launched specifically to look at this, nothing more than this huge brown dwarf star. They say that the government says that it is probably a brown dwarf star. They say it on several occasions. And when you look up the mass of a brown dwarf star, you first have to look up the mass of Jupiter. When you go to wikipedia.org, you'll find that the mass of Jupiter is 318 Earth masses. And then when you look up brown dwarf star in Wikipedia, you'll find out that one of the puniest brown dwarf stars is about 3 Jupiter masses. So we're talking 3 times 318, or nearly 1,000 Earth masses. The result of that thing will not hit us, but it'll come many millions of miles away. But the gravitational force of attraction, as you know, by the universal law, Newton's universal law of gravity, gravitational force of attraction is proportional to the mass of body A times the mass of body B. So when those two attracting forces, Earth and planet X, you multiply their mass, you find out that the gravitational force of attraction between the two is going to be tremendous. And what that does, it pulls at the crustal surfaces of planet Earth and causes earthquakes. It causes all kinds of natural catastrophes. In fact, what has been stated by other planet X researchers and scientists is that there will be crustal tides on the surface of Earth. You'll have tides, of course, tsunamis in the ocean, but you'll have crustal tides also, because as the planet goes by, its gravitational pull is like if you had a peach, an extremely overripe peach, and you wrapped your hand all the way around that peach and rotated your hand, you would cause the skin of the peach to slip and to wrinkle. Well, that's how mountains were formed on planet Earth thousands of years ago when this planet came by on its previous cometary incursions. Mountain building. So what we have to do is prepare for it. I'm not here to scare people. I'm here to prepare people and to make them aware and to make them share the information with others. So there are a lot of practical ideas that I have as to how we can protect ourselves from these major floods, epic floods that are occurring right now. I urge people to get hip boots, fishermen's hip boots, because they're going to be wading through deep water. The wetsuits, people are going to be wading in chest-high water. I urge people to fix their attic, do a very simple thing in their attic, which I have to do myself pretty soon when the weather cools down a little bit, and that is protect my roof from getting ripped off by 90-mile-an-hour, 100-mile-an-hour, 110-mile-an-hour wind, straight-line wind storms. Now, tornadoes, of course, are the most devastating, but having a tornado come by is like someone shooting a bullet, you know, into a crowd of people. You might hit a couple, one or two, but it's unlikely that you'll hurt anybody else. However, straight-line windstorms affect everybody because they cover many, many miles in square area, and they reach speeds of 90, 100, 110 miles an hour. I have documentation. I have been diligently videotaping severe weather reports since 2004. I have about 250 hours on many six-hour video cassettes of nothing but severe weather reports from the Weather Channel. And I can tell you, these straight-line windstorms are becoming very common, and they will become increasingly common as this planet comes closer. So here's what people need to do. You go up in your attic. First of all, you get this glue gun. It's like a caulking gun, and it has all-weather glue, weatherproof glue. And you run a bead of this glue right at the very top of your rafters in the roof from the inside of your attic. The rafters where they meet the underside of the roof plywood sheathing. And if you run this bead of glue along the top of the rafters where they meet the underside of the roof sheathing, you will tremendously strengthen the roof of your house. Because without that protection, the winds will just rip the nails right out of the rafters and rip your roof off. Once that roof comes off, your house gets flooded and is destroyed. The rain will absolutely destroy your house. So the first major thing you have to do is to get that roof secured. I had a new roof put on my house about 2 years ago, and I made sure that I got shingles that were rated at the very highest wind speed that is available. Also, I was lucky enough to look around and I found a roofer, and this is an important point. You got to find a roofer who does it the old way with copper nails and a hammer. Do not hire anybody who uses a nail gun, because this roofer, his grandparents started the business, and he told me that he says, if you don't put those nails right along that line, there's a line that's on the shingle. If you miss that line, you are not securing the shingles, and soon after you install the shingles, they're going to be falling off, even without winds. So you got to make sure you get an old-time roofer, pay him an extra $1,000. I paid an extra $1,000. It cost me $8,000 to have the roof put on. And you use copper nails, because galvanized nails will rust out. So that's what you have to do. That's the number one thing to do, but that's for winds. Secondly, for cars, many people are going to have their cars totaled by baseball-sized hail and softball-sized hail. I've got many reports from the Weather Channel proving that this is the case in many parts of the country, North Dakota and Oklahoma. Baseball-sized, softball-sized. It's just incredible. And, of course, your car will be totaled and many people will be killed. One of the ideas that, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'm
okay. One of the ideas that I had was to get car covers. And Clay, you might want to do this. Get a sponsor. I'll bet you can really sell a lot of car covers this way. You get a car cover, somebody who has an excess of car covers, they're willing to sell them cheap, and maybe somebody in your audience who wants to be enterprising and make some money. You find a way to heat seal a sort of a bubble type envelope or a plastic sheet inside of that, on the underside of that car cover, so that you can, it's not inflated, it should be inflatable, but when it's not inflated, you could roll it up and put it in your trunk. And then if you're driving along and your NOAA weather radio, that's another thing you have to do, is get a NOAA weather radio. Your NOAA weather radio tells you there's a hailstorm approaching. You can pull the car over if you got time. Put that car cover on, plug it into your car, plug in a tire pump, an electric tire pump into the cigarette lighter of your car, and quickly pump up, inflate the underside of that car cover and protect your car from being totaled. The insurance companies will soon not be able to have to default. They soon will not be able to cover all the claims that are going to be hitting them for damaged cars.
John, has this brown dwarf, has that been spotted? I mean, obviously the media is controlled. They don't want a panic. They don't want people knowing that it's coming. But I've heard reports from Nassau and other places that they've spotted, as a matter of fact, they've even spotted a solar system that's just a few 100 light years away, pretty close.
Right.
In galaxy terms.
It definitely has been spotted a number of times. The first time it was sighted, it was in 1983. And this was when the government, the federal government of the United States, was not in their most sinister mode of information control, and somebody made at the top rungs of the evil government hierarchy overlooked this article, and the truth got out accidentally. This was in the New York Times, January 30th, 1983. I went to my library and photocopied, got a high-resolution photocopy of the actual newspaper articles that the government of the United States regretted that they ever allowed to get out. January 30th, 1983, I'm reading it right now, New York Times, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X, by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought planet X. And the article goes on to say that they're launching, the U.S. and the Netherlands were jointly launching the Infrared Astronomical Satellite, IRAS, into space specifically to find planet X. And in this article, they state that it is probably a brown dwarf star. And again, we found by definition a brown dwarf, a smaller, puny type of brown dwarf, would be about 1,000 Earth masses. Okay, that was January 30th, 1983. Ironically, exactly 11 months later, after this thing had been launched, the New York Times was heralding the prelude to the launch of this infrared astronomical satellite, specifically sent up to site Planet X. And then 11 months later, on December 30th, 1983, I've got the Washington Post article, which I also photocopied from the library archives. And here's the article, Washington Post, December 30th, 1983. Mystery heavenly body discovered, possibly as large as Jupiter. And that's an understatement, believe me. By Thomas O'Toole, Washington Post staff writer. A heavenly body, possibly as large as the giant planet Jupiter, and possibly so close to Earth that it would be part of this solar system, has been found in the direction of the constellation Orion by an orbiting telescope aboard the U.S. Infrared Astronomical Satellite. So mysterious is the object that astronomers do not know if it is a planet, a giant comet, a nearby protostar that never got hot enough to become a star, a distant galaxy so young that it is still in the process of forming its stars, or a galaxy so shrouded in dust that none of the light cast by its stars ever gets through. Okay, I won't read any more of the article, but they mention here it could be a protostar. This is exactly what it is. A protostar is a baby star that never got massive enough and never collected enough celestial dust encircling it to gravitationally pull it all in and compact it into a huge ball so tight with such tremendous internal gravitational forces, inward pulling gravitational forces, that it would actually get so hot that it would create nuclear fusion and thus create the energy like our sun does, enough energy to light up as our sun does. You see, our sun is estimated to be about 330,000 Earth masses. That's a third of a million Earth masses. This planet X, of course, is just a puny little thing. Only about 1,000 Earth masses, so it never got hot enough, never got big enough to have nuclear fusion. Therefore, it became a slow, smoldering brown dwarf star, and it is on a cometary orbit. It comes in every 3,600 years, just like a pendulum. You can predict the period of a pendulum. Pendulums are used in the grandfather's clock. We've all seen a grandfather's clock, and the pendulum becomes one of the main timekeeping devices in the grandfather's clock, because the period of that pendulum, the time it takes to swing from one extreme back to the other, is highly uniform. Likewise, we have the ends of a pendulum inside and outside of our solar system are our sun. That's one end of the pendulum. And the other end is a distant dead sun about 50 billion miles away that has been actually, again, from NASA, the New Science and Invention Encyclopedia. New Science and Invention Encyclopedia of 1987 got this information from NASA, and they said that there is a distant dead sun out there about which Planet X orbits on a long elliptical cometary orbit, just like a pendulum, or just like a clothesline. You know, one end of the pulley, one pulley on a clothesline might be likened to our sun, and the other end, the far end pulley, might be likened to this dead distant sun, and the clothesline itself then would describe the path of Planet X. So that's basically it. I mean, and
now, what about the Hubble telescope, John? We got that up there. I mean, why haven't they pointed that in that direction? I mean,
they have. They claimed that it was defective, that it failed, and it was the only reason why they said it failed was because they did not want to release any more photographs. But they themselves have been using the Hubble. It did not fail. They've been using it to sight Planet X. I'm glad you brought that up. But then in later years now, here we've got the infrared astronomical satellite sighting Planet X in 1983. We have the Hubble telescope and sighting it, and they shut it down and told us that it was defective. And then later on, we have the South Pole Telescope. Marshall Masters documented the construction of the South Pole Telescope in his book, Planet X Forecast. And that was constructed, went online in 2007. Now, there's no reason why you would want to build a telescope in the South Pole. The conditions are so harsh, you could not, even under the best circumstances, you could not survive more than a few seconds at the South Pole due to the cold and the wind. However, they went through the trouble of creating this facility at the cost of many millions of dollars because the only way you positioned, the only location on Earth from which you could view this planet was from the southern hemisphere. And the further south you go, the better view you get. And that's why they constructed the South Pole Telescope. Now, in January of 2008, a whistleblower, an informant who had gotten information about the sighting of Planet X from the South Pole Telescope, went on YouTube. He came up with the alias, the name Nibiru Shock 2012. Now, Nibiru is actually the ancient name that the Sumerians used for Planet X thousands of years ago when Planet X entered our solar system and destroyed their civilization. They called it Nibiru, N-I-B-I-R-U. So the name that this whistleblower gave to himself on YouTube was Nibiru Shock 2012. Well, in one day that was taken down. That the video, I believe either photographs or actual moving film of Planet X was taken by the South Pole Telescope. It was taken down, and they came up with another guy who claimed he was Nibiru Shock 2012 and said, oh, it was a hoax, I was just joking. Obviously, that was the U.S. intelligence apparatus. They had stopped this guy from putting information out and tried to do a very clumsy cover-up by pretending that it was a hoax. So there's more information. Marshall Masters actually posted the photograph that Nibiru Shock 2012 posted. I think he has it on his website, which is YOWUSA.com, YOWUSA.com. You can just, or you can search for Nibiru Shock 2012. I'm not sure if, you'll probably find it on something like that on YouTube. Also, the Vatican knows all about it. The Vatican had sent up, I got this information from some people in Italy, some researchers in Italy. One of them was a publisher of a magazine by the name of Cristoforo Barbato, the publisher of a magazine out in Italy. He was contacted by a man who claimed that he was an agent of the Vatican's SIV, which nobody even is supposed to know this organization exists. It's the equivalent of the CIA in the Vatican. It's called the Servizio Informazioni del Vaticano. SIV. This man claimed to be an agent with the SIV. Cristoforo Barbato was very careful to check out his credentials because he didn't want to be putting out disinformation in his magazine. he checked him out very carefully, met with the guy at a predetermined position of location in Rome, in a park in Rome where they could not be overheard, and he got the information from this man that the Vatican has already taken videotapes and films of this Planet X. This was about, I would say, now 2005, 2006. And what they did, this agent claims that a hypersonic aircraft was launched from Edwards Air Force Base with a camera, with a special type of a very light space type of video camera that would take pictures and transmit the pictures back to back to Earth. And it did. It was launched from this hypersonic plane, went out into deep space, and traveled quite a distance out until it was able to get a pictures of Planet X, transmit these pictures back to Earth at an abandoned oil refinery in Alaska, where they had the facility set up at this front location, this abandoned oil refinery, and deciphered the pictures, and these pictures were given by the agent, the Vatican agent, to Cristoforo Barbato. You can find those pictures on the internet, and the good thing about it is at the time when I saw them, I said, well, I don't know what this is, I can't tell, but now when I compare it with other pictures that have been shown, you begin to see the same characteristics in this picture, and that really fortifies the evidence that this is indeed Planet X. Also, Planet X has been sighted back in, I'm trying to remember whether it was early this year or early last year, by the Chandra, C-H-A-N-D-R-A, Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite of the United States government. It was, I guess, enough scientists knew about it that they were forced to somehow publicize it, but only in the most cloaked, convoluted way, confusing way. They said, I think the article stated that we have sighted a comet out in deep space, but we don't know what it is. And that's all they said about it. I don't think they posted the picture at all, but some people have posted on YouTube what they claim are pictures of this Planet X taken by the Chandra X-ray Observatory satellite. See, X-ray and infrared viewing is what is necessary at this time, up to this time, in order to view this dark, very dark star that emits very little light, this dark brown dwarf star. However, now as it gets closer, it becomes more and more visible. Not only does it become more visible in the southern hemisphere, but we are seeing traces of it. We're seeing byproducts of it. When I say byproducts, what I mean is this huge brown dwarf star, because of its tremendous gravitational pull, attracts all sizes of celestial bodies as it travels through deep space. It pulls them into a gravitational field of influence, and it captures them. And the field of influence is many millions of miles in diameter. It captures objects as large as small planets and then down to somewhat smaller, such as comets. It captures meteors. It captures asteroids. It captures boulders, rocks, and even a red iron oxide dust. And in fact, when the pictures we've seen of it, taken from deep space, taken by some of these government cameras, show that it's cloudy. It has a red, hazy dust surrounding it. And so it has definitely been sighted. And we're going to see, in fact, I was talking about some of the byproducts of Planet X. Therefore, because literally millions of celestial bodies gravitationally encircle this Planet X, some of these outlying celestial bodies, I call it a bee swarm, this bee swarm surrounding the beehive, Planet X, are actually crashing into some of the planets in our solar system. Now, this planet comes up from below, this huge disk. Just imagine a huge, envision in your mind an analogy. That would be a huge circular picnic table in your backyard. And then imagine it magically being elevated, this table being elevated up to maybe 20, 30 feet above your head. Now, that would represent our solar system, the invisible disk on which all the planets revolve around the sun. Now, you're down below, and you're sort of like going to shoot a little analogy of Planet X up toward this, the bottom of this circular table, way up above your head. So you take a slingshot with a big steel ball bearing, and that ball bearing represents Planet X, and then you shoot that ball bearing up until it punctures the table. On the underside of the table, 30, 40 feet above your head, and then the ball bearing goes through the table, loops over the top of the lamp in the center of the table, which is the sun, loops over the top of it, and comes back down again at about the same position that it came up, the same distance from the sun from which it came up. And then it comes back down again and hits the ground and does another cycle every 3,600 years. Well, you can see some of that as this planet comes up from below. Right now, we believe it's near the bottom of our ecliptic table. And the reason I believe that is in 2009, the sun went mysteriously quiet. It switched off almost like a light bulb. Sun had been blazing with extraordinary intensity, with all kinds of flares, unprecedented flares. And all of a sudden, in 2008, 2009, the sun went extraordinarily quiet. People were concerned. They said scientists were saying that they had never seen such solar quiescence before. Well, I had theorized, and it seems my theory has now proven to be correct, theorized that the reason why the sun went quiet is because the normal excitation of Planet X, the electrical excitation, that is, between Planet X and the sun, because these are electrical bodies, engulfed in electrified gases called plasma. And they discharge into the sun and zap the sun and cause the sun to be highly hyperactive. However, when this planet got below Jupiter, I theorized in the middle of 2009, there was a huge comet crash into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter. It wasn't revealed to us by our government. They saw it, but they never put it out. However, an amateur astronomer saw it, photographed it, and put it up all over the internet, and then the government said, oh yeah, we found a comet. We found some huge comet crashing into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter. The government was never about to reveal it to us because their main goal is to keep this suppressed from the public so that we will not prepare, so that they go underground and we stay up here to face all the disasters.
Now, let me skip back here to a little bit earlier in our conversation. You talked about Phil Snyder. Now, I was well aware of Phil Snyder. He was talking about the underground base at Dulce, and he stated he got into he and some Marines got into a gun battle in under the ground in Dulce with aliens, with Greys or some type of aliens.
Yes, you know, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I have no preconceived ideas as to the existence or the non-existence of these beings. However, I speculate that Phil Snyder, again, this man knew he was going to be killed. They tried to kill him 9 times until they finally succeeded. I believe that Phil Snyder introduced some information that would cause him to seem somewhat less credible, some information that would harm his credibility to the extent that the government would not pursue him and not try to kill him because his story was not credible anyway. I sort of speculate that that's why he put that information out. Now, it could be that they did encounter these aliens. We know that there's a person who never lies, never told a lie before. His name is Jesus, and he tells us about these demonic spirits many times. In Matthew, the book of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, how people have these demonic spirits indwelling in them. And certainly, time doesn't change over 2,000 years, so people today have these demonic spirits in them. So, again, whether people believe that Jesus is the Son of God or not, we all know that he never told a lie. And so many times he refers to these demonic, unclean spirits that were indwelling people. So, again, I don't know one way or another whether Phil Snyder encountered grays, these gray aliens, or not. But I'll tell you one thing, his information is highly credible. when he tells us about the 131 underground cities, and there's another guy named Richard Sauder, S-A-U-D-E-R, who's also been speaking quite a bit about the underground cities. And incidentally, there are also undersea cities. I don't know if you've heard about the undersea cities that they built. These people are really preparing. The power elite of the world are really desperate to get underground and protect themselves from the disasters that are going to occur. Now, I never believed that underground would be a safe place when earthquakes occur, but evidently their geologists tell them that if you go deep enough or you go to the right locations, you can actually be safer from an earthquake. That's what I read in Marshall Masters' book. Excuse me. Marshall Masters, incidentally, is the former science editor with CNN. So they do have these underground cities and undersea cities.
Now, there's an underground city right below the Denver airport, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. That's Cheyenne Mountain, in the bowels of Cheyenne Mountain. And again, you alluded to Jesse Ventura is a great hero for doing this report. I actually video a DVD recorded in high resolution. I've got the whole program on CD, on DVD. And also, you'll find it on YouTube. Everybody, please go to YouTube and type in Jesse Ventura Apocalypse. That's all you're going to do. And you'll find all six episodes of that one-hour broadcast. It's absolutely flabbergasting when you see that Jesse Ventura and his producer, Michael Braverman, went down underground there. I don't know why they were allowed under there, but they viewed these underground facilities. And Michael Braverman, on this video, this program, speaks to Colonel Wynn, who is the chief of security at this underground city. And this chief of security is saying, we will do whatever it takes to protect this facility. And Michael Braverman says, well, are you going to shoot Americans who try to come under there for shelter? He says, we're here to protect this facility. And then Michael Braverman says to him, well, would you let me in if things get really bad? And he says, well, when we shut those 3-ton or so many ton steel doors, you can knock all you want. And that's what we're up against, folks. You see, not only is they expect to be protected from earthquakes, but the major thing that they are concerned about is the solar scorching, which is going to coming soon, just like with the earthquakes right now. We're getting more and more intense earthquakes, but we're also about to get solar scorching. This is another thing that I want to warn people about. We've got to start digging. Get yourself some digging supplies. I've got to start doing it myself, start getting into shape, exercising, lifting weights every day, and get myself strong so that I can start digging a real deep shelter. Now, there's another thing you can sell. I mean, I'm not interested in, I'm not trying to help you sell things, but there are so many opportunities now. Well, people are going to be desperate for car covers that will protect your car from being totaled by baseball size and softball size hail. Okay, they're also going to be desperate for underground shelters. Here's my idea. You learn to dig, you get the digging facilities plus enough buckets that you can, when you get down 10, 15, 20 feet deep, and get yourself some kind of a ladder device, that you can lift, have somebody hauling up that dirt as you're digging it, because you're gonna need this kind of apparatus to dig very deep underground to protect yourself from the solar scorching, which will incinerate a lot of people. Everybody should go to YouTube and type in Knowing, the movie Knowing, K-N-O-W-I-N-G, 2009 movie. They warn us about the solar scorching.
Well, they're also warning you in 2012, aren't they?
Yes. Dr. Michio Kaku, very well-known astrophysicist. He's been around for a long time. He's not just one of those media talking heads, because I used to listen to him when he was on Pacifica Radio, WBAI, and his information was not controlled by the power elite. So I trust Dr. Michio Kaku, and also he has taken the articles, and he says, this is not me talking. This is the government here, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and the National Academy of Sciences all say that they use the word could. We could have solar scorching in 2012 that could destroy our entire power grid and revert us back to a primitive existence.
It's interesting, John. Now, I talked about this over 10 years ago, almost 15 years ago. I brought this up. I wrote an article, a short story, called The Future Past. where I discussed this exact thing happening. I called it the conjunction back thousands of years ago when Atlantis was the most advanced civilization on the planet. And the conjunction brought it down. But they got something and they prepared for it. And the way they prepared for it was by sending most of the inhabitants of Atlantis off-world in my story. It was only fiction about it. You know, I wrote fiction.
Yeah, sounds like a great story.
Well, it is. It is. And you can go see that on my archives page. You can read The Future Past. I think it's the second story in the link that I've got on some of my short stories.
I remember a long time ago you reading an excerpt from one of your articles. Maybe this was the same one. One of your stories, it was about a meteor. Somebody looking up in the sky and seeing a meteor coming, and it looked like a whole chariot of horses.
That's right.
You probably remember that one.
Yeah, that's The Future Past.
Oh, you should read that. You should read that excerpt on air sometime.
Well, that's quite possible that I could do that. Now I wanted to go back to Phil Snyder. He was murdered. I mean, they tried to say it was a suicide, but I don't think it obviously wasn't a suicide. And so they killed him for putting out this information.
Oh, definitely. I mean, his wife told the people afterwards. I mean, Marshall Masters documents the whole thing very well in his book, The Planet X Forecast, that Phil Schneider had stated publicly, he says, if I die, they kill me. They're trying to kill me. He made it well known that they were trying to kill him. So he was blowing a whistle on this information. And what we have to do, folks, again, we can protect ourselves from the next meteor strike. Yesterday, incidentally, we had almost had a meteor strike that would have caused worldwide disaster. It was on spaceweather.com, which I believe is a government NASA website, spaceweather.com. And read about it. Go there. They said there were two asteroids coming in due to hit yesterday. Two of them were very close. One of them was only 49,000, expected to come within 49,000 miles of Earth. That is like so close, unbelievably close, dangerously close. And you didn't hear anything about it in the mass media at all because, of course, we all know, we can all even assume that the government will never tell anybody because they don't want to panic the public. That sounds like a responsible thing to do. They don't want to panic the public. However, they'll never tell you. We have infinite information, too, from their own statements. We have an article. I'm trying to refine it. I know I have it in my archives, on my hard drive somewhere. It's an article from the BBC, I believe it is, British Broadcasting Company, where they state that the U.S. government says that if there were an asteroid approaching Earth, endangering Earth, their policy is not to tell the public. This is stated by the U.S. government. We will not tell you. This is his words. Now, Larry Joseph is another scientist who appeared on Jesse Ventura's Apocalypse 2012 True TV broadcast. And Larry Joseph stated, he said, Governor, this is not me speaking. This is the National Academy of Sciences. And he put the article right on the screen so you can see the article. So if you freeze frame or if you pause your DVD, you can actually read the whole article from the National Academy of Sciences stating that solar scorching will probably occur in 2012 and could destroy our power grid, not only the power grid, but everything connected to it, the computer systems. And they showed an old film going back to 1859. I didn't even know they had films back in 1859, but an old, grainy, primitive film from 1859 showing the sizzling that occurred from the solar scorching that existed back then. And fortunately, the only lines that were up, the only wires that were up were telegraph lines, because that's all they had in 1859. But now, of course, it's going to devastate the economy. You can't buy anything in a supermarket unless the computers, are running, unless the gas pumps don't run without electricity. Nothing operates. So another thing is obviously food. People have to start storing food.
Okay, let me interrupt you here for just a second, because folks, if you go to freeamerican.com now, you can get samples of storable foods free right now by going to Free American. It's kind of down on the left hand side of the page. The information there is right beside, right above the show that you're listening to today, right beside Ray Stevens, God Save America. It says, click here to learn how we can prepare while we're creating Liberty Villages. And the address is freeamerican.mysundanceglobal.com. Now this is a new company that is set up that is doing storable foods, and you can get it, you can make it, you can tell your friends about it, and it's working. So it's one of the ways that we're going to prepare about it. Now, John, you know, I started talking about Liberty Villages a long time ago. I had it in the centerfold of my magazine for many, many months. Do you recall that?
I remember that going back in the mid-90s, you were talking about people getting try to organize people so that they could join together and live in communities, free communities. Yes, I definitely do remember that. It was back in Bingham, New Mexico.
Yes, yeah, I had planned to do it there in Bingham, and then that kind of bit the big one when I sold the property to develop it. I sold the property to develop it, and then they decided they didn't want to develop it.
But the concept is good.
The concept is still good. I mean, we could still do this in our own neighborhoods. It's real simple, folks. Liberty, the concept for Liberty Village, if you got a farm or a ranch and you're willing to open up a few acres of your land to allow people to live on it, and I'm talking about allowing Americans to live on it, not illegal aliens, not a bunch of Mexicans on riding mowers. I'm talking about Americans using the farms and ranches that exist now to teach Americans how to grow their own food, how to raise their own animals, how to live in harmony with nature.
Not only is that a great idea, it's a vital idea. It's a survival idea.
I think that's exactly what it is. And all of a sudden, After I came out with this, suddenly we had all these things happening, like the National Animal Identification System, and now Bill S-510, which is sponsored by Monsanto, which is basically Monsanto is simply the incarnation of plank number 9 on the Communist Manifesto. Corporate farms, and also plank number 7, government ownership of factories and agriculture. And suddenly they're trying to make it impossible or illegal for us to create the Liberty Villages. Oh, Clay, you know, the zoning department would never let you put a windmill on the roof of your house. And some of these neighborhood associations won't allow you to have solar on your roof. And now with S-510, they're going to make it illegal for you to grow a tomato in your backyard. Maybe am I just being paranoid here? I mean,
it's absolutely true. I mean, the Israelis did that to the Palestinians way back in the 1980s. They forced them to have a license for every tomato they grew. That's how dictatorial and enslaving the system is.
Oh, now, wait a minute. That's the other thing. Now, Clay, you'd just be so much better off if you just didn't talk about the Jews, if you just didn't talk about Israel. Hey, okay, all right. I'll stop talking about the Jews when they stop talking about the Palestinians. How's that?
Right. Well, it's, you know, a lot of Jews are not guilty of it. It's just the ones, the leadership of Israel, the Zionist leadership. And, of course, the people are just guilty in a way, too, because they condone it. They allow, just as the American people are guilty of condoning the atrocities that our evil government commits, are simply sitting down and watching TV and drinking a beer and not caring about anything. People are apathetic, and they certainly do share and the blame for the atrocities that are committed by evil leaders, not whether those people be in Israel or they be American citizens. So it's the evil Zionist government, the leaders, they're the ones responsible for all this. primarily.
They are. It is the elitist. I've said this over and over again. If you're, it doesn't matter to me whether you're Jewish, whether you're Muslim, or whether you're a Christian. It doesn't matter to me what, whether you're black, white, yellow man, whatever. It doesn't matter to me as long as you're not trying to dominate or kill or possess what your neighbor has.
Yes, right. So they're doing it. They're enslaving us. They're enslaving all the peoples of the world. You can find it happening in Germany and England, et cetera, all over. It's worse in England. It's worse in Canada than it is here. So, but when things get really bad, when you start seeing roofs getting blown off houses and you see disasters in the streets, you see towns being flooded away, which we're seeing right now. I'm not predicting some horrific, imaginary scene from the future.
Never.
Telling you what's actually happening right now. You're seeing towns floating away in Germany. I got it on videotape from the Weather Channel. You're seeing towns floating away in Pakistan. The whole nation is floating away in Pakistan. In Poland, towns floating away. I got it all on videotape. When this happens, the government that suddenly loses its control, and that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid of these disasters causing the people, say, to thumb their nose at the government and all their dictatorial rules, because they know darn well the government's not going to be able to enforce these rules when things get tough. Your local police are going to be out there trying to protect themselves from floods, and your local police are now going to be forced to do humanitarian things like have water rescues. Right now you've got water rescues happening all over the place in Dallas, Texas, Dallas, Austin area over the last couple of days. The Weather Channel shows water rescues happening all over the country. I cannot tell you how many epic floods have occurred in the last several years that I've got all documented on videotape. Washington State, Oregon, California, Texas a couple of times. Texas, epic floods with only a couple months away, epic drought. And epic floods in New Orleans, and epic floods in Louisville, Kentucky, epic floods in Atlanta, Georgia, where even some of the Weather Channel's own meteorologists got their homes flooded out. Epic floods in Baltimore, epic floods in New England, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, the whole country has had epic flooding. What do the police do then? Do they become good little Gestapo and follow all the government's dictatorial rules that infuriate the people? No. They try the best to do the water rescues, to try to save the lives that they're commissioned or committed to save. And then all of a sudden they find out that they're with the people and not with the rats at the top.
Now, do we have a timeline on there? Now, the Hopi Indians and the Mayans all predicted that this was coming about, didn't they?
Oh, definitely, yes. The Hopi, they had seen it. Their ancestors had seen this happening. The Anasazi Indians was another tribe, a very highly technological tribe from the southwest. They vanished. No one knows what happened to the Anasazi. But they had a highly advanced mathematical system, and they were very schooled and knowledgeable about the movement of the planets. They made planetary observation a very important part of their culture. And the reason was because they knew that whenever you had certain planetary conditions, you had disaster. They were looking for planetary conjunctions, when the planets would all align, and the force of all these aligning planets then would be multiplied, would be compounded on planet Earth, and would cause earthquakes. So the Hopi knew about it. The Anasazi knew about it. We have other civilizations that talked about it, that documented it. The Emperor Yaltu, I think his name was Yaltu, Y-A-L-T-O-U, of China, was the emperor who reigned at the very same time of the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt. And Emperor Yaltu, in his imperial annals, his historians wrote that the sun stood still for several days. There was tremendous flooding in the country. And it took them 12 years to dig canals to drain the water down in these flooded areas. And this was at the same time that the exodus from Egypt occurred. The sun stood still because the Earth's rotation had been temporarily stopped. And it was daytime. In China, it was daytime for several days. At the same time, it was nighttime on the other side of the Earth in Central America when the Mexicans and the Mayans, Aztecs, all record in their ancient legends that it was dark and it was fearful and there was high winds and tremendous destruction that occurred. And so you see, the Earth has paused in its rotation because it's huge. 1,000 Earth mass, brown dwarf star, Planet X, had come overhead, started to come loop over, just like that analogy I gave you of the steel ball bearing going up through the bottom of the table and looping over the top. When it loops over, it's got to go toward the center of the solar system, toward the sun. Well, in getting toward the sun, over the top of the sun, it has to first go over the top of Mars, and then over the top of Earth, and then over the top of Venus, and then Mercury, before it gets over the top of the sun. And then it comes back down, and it goes over the top of Earth again, so we get hit two times by this thing. Well, when I say hit, I mean gravitationally pulled, such that the Earth pauses like a giant hand would pause a giant top, spinning top. When the top is spinning smoothly, it's erect, it's not wobbling at all. But if a hand comes by and the palm of that hand grazes the side of the top slows down, and as it slows down, it loses its vertical stability and it begins to wobble. And then, as it slows down more, the wobbling accentuates more until it finally topples over. And if you go to the book of Isaiah, written around 600 B.C., chapter 24, Isaiah chapter 24, verse 20, God is speaking to Isaiah. Isaiah said, God told me this, to write this down. He said, the earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard and shall nod like a hammock. Now, I found the right words. The wrong words were put in by the King James translators, who had no clue of what this thing was talking about. So they put in the words removed like a cottage. But I looked up the Hebrew, the actual Hebrew words, and they are, the earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard and shall nod like a hammock. Now, if you take a model of globe of Earth, a model globe of Earth, and put it into a hammock, into the bed of a hammock in your backyard, pull the hammock back, what would happen to the North Pole when you pull the hammock back? The North Pole would sort of tilt downward toward the equator.
All right.
The equator will tilt downward toward the South Pole.
John, we're out of time. I'd like to talk more about this in a couple of weeks.
Sure.
All right, sir.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for being on with me.
You're welcome.
Recording has been completed.
Okay. Thank you. God bless you. And, folks, go to freeamerican.com. Go check out the archives page, read the future past. I predicted what is about to happen over almost 40 years ago. God bless you, and see you.